Welcome to Lat B, the only podcast that comes with a free bandits bonus. Lat B, where MMA and UFC get silly. This is the Lat B podcast.
Welcome back. UFC pay-per-view 243 this weekend. Coming up, we're going to have an 11-card back bout coming out of Auckland, New Zealand. Before we get there, we're not even going to do 15 minutes. We're going to try to get it under 10. Do the briefest of recaps. Talk a little bit about what's been going on in the Twitterverse. And then hit this pay-per-view as hard as you can. Right in the face. Going down south. Crikey, it's going to be a hell of an episode. How have you been since we last were on the show last week? We ended up going to Denmark.
Oh my gosh, it was the worst.
Upset City, 7 upsets overall. Some humongous.
Hello out there.
Upsets that we had. Everybody was doing rough. I feel like everybody was doing rough. I don't know too many bettors that were plus money over the weekend.
I got the first fight perfect, and I was feeling all good about myself, and then didn't get another fight right until well into the main card.
And that was Jack Shore getting a quick submission in the third round against Nolan Hernandez. So
not a quick submission.
Yeah, the longest submission. So he ended up being the big favorite and winning via the way he should have, which was that submission. Then we had Dykesi versus Vanata. I ended up switching after watching weigh-ins. Vanata with those dirty splits, it did end up switching my mind later in the week. Good thing, because that saved my night pretty much, having two switches in the night. One of them for me was this over to Dykesi.
Yeah, did you get six right?
Six of them.
The highest right of anyone I follow.
It was, everybody had a hard night for sure.
It was rough.
It was absolutely rough in there, but Vanata just not fighting to his potential, and we've kind of seen his cap here where Dykesi looked good.
I don't want to scare you guys, but I think I'm going to get on the Dykesi. I really think he looks good.
Yep.
For some reason, his age, it finally showed that he was this young guy, and this is what the difference of how quickly they learn and grow and are picking things up. And he just looked, like every fight, he comes out and looks twice as good as he did the fight before. So if he keeps growing like this, he's title contender type.
American,
he looked so good.
American Top Team will change your life. So yeah, then we
point,
move on.
Good point.
Moving on to the biggest upset of the night. This really started off all of the upsets with Lena Landsberg coming in over Macy Chiasson. We were big on Macy. I had her absolutely everywhere. She was one of the most expensive, if not the most expensive. And I mean, oh man, did she shit in the cereal. This was a complete gas after the first round where Chiasson just worked on a high crotch single leg takedown for the whole round. Lena defended it. Second and third round, Chiasson really just didn't get out of that first gear. Lena ended up on top and just stayed on top. I mean, she easily won this 30-27, maybe 29-28. You could have given Chiasson the first round, but minus 500. Wow. WMMA.
I think this is a lesson learned. This is what you want to... $100. no. Every single time one of these new fighters finally meets another name we've heard of, this is what happens.
A veteran?
Yeah,
real veteran?
Yeah. And so if it's going to happen with Macy, I just think that they're good stayaways.
You were right on this because I was the one swinging you over to Chiasson and you're like, I don't know, she's not beating anyone good. And I was like, they are good people. Well, maybe I was wrong. So good call on that. I like what you're saying with it. We got to be more careful as it goes on. Then we had a dirty split, which is, this is the first time I've ever seen this. And I've been watching since pretty much day one, where there was a draw announced on the mic, which was then reversed halfway through another fight where they're like, hold on. The refs don't know how to count in Denmark. And it was actually a decision majority split for Giga Chikadze in here. The striker getting it done. Dirty fight, Brandon Davis. Can't trust them. It's probably time, my friend, to get on out of here, Brandon Davis. I think it's 3 or 4 in a row now, but it's constantly the same avenue, and it's just he's losing split decisions, and he does it to himself. It was a really grimy fight, though. It would have been hard to be a judge there. Do you even remember that bout?
Yeah, kind of. It just wasn't very exciting.
Exactly. Then we ended up having Ismail Nardiev, them young hips, coming through against the veteran, Badzahari. Zaire just looking every bit of his age. We were kind of speculating that he was starting to look older after that fight, and it just kind of kept the ball rolling where Badr Azari is just kind of someone who's going to be fading at this point of his career, especially against the young guys. Still tentative on Ismail. It was a close fight.
I really thought Nardiev looked great, and it really just made me think, because, you know, he just handled Badr Azari everywhere. That I was thinking, gosh, is Chance Roundtree that good on the ground?
Rencounter? I don't know. I think it's Badr Azari looking every bit. Because it says 38. He could be 42.
I don't know. Ishmael looked a lot better than I thought he was going to out there by far. And I was very impressed by everything I saw from him as well.
Then we ended up going to 185 pounds where Muradov beat DiCirico. Uneventful fight. I don't even remember really what happened in it, but I know that I didn't see an absolute murderer in there. DiCirico just also being a prospect who hasn't really gone anywhere.
You were right about that fight.
Then we had...
I kind of swayed you toward DiCirico.
Both were going with DiCirico's veteranship, but just not pulling the trigger. I'm not really high on either guy. Then we ended up staying in the 185-pound division where John Phillips knocked out Alan Amadovsky first round. That left hook landed. The white Mike Tyson coming through, living up to his name. The only thing you don't want to do is brawl with Phillips, and that's what Alan did. So he deserved to get finished in there, essentially. I wasn't heavy on this fight. I did have a stab inside the distance Phillips just because, again, Holland has always said, hardest hitter he's ever felt is this guy.
Yeah, that's what I thought when I was looking at the other guy, Limp Baby, is I was like, well, maybe John Phillips is the hardest hitter.
Then we ended up getting the other fight that I switched over from, which was actually Alex Oliveira to Nicholas Dalby. This one said we could have switched on the air. I ended up just because of the hometown advantage. And dare I say, the ref was one of the worst refs I've ever seen in there. Not only in the first round did...
He cost Oliveira the fight.
The fight, 100%.
It did happen in the first round to Dalby, but it wasn't nearly as egregious.
Dalby was in an advantageous top position, and he got stood up to neutral after a foul from an upkick for Oliveira, so that was really wrong. But then in the third, Oliveira was passing to get an advantageous position while ground and pounding, and the ref stood it up. Hopefully that ref doesn't ref in the UFC anymore, because there is 0% of a reason that should have been stood up. I know the community definitely saw it, and it was egregious.
Dalby looked good out there, or is it that Alex Oliveira has been in so many wars at this point? It's kind of like, it's the high water mark. He'll always be a big name that you can put on a prelim, but that's about that.
I think Dalby's gotten it together a little bit more, but he's addressed a lot of those demons, and he was drinking. He had an alcohol problem, yeah, just like smoking.
He looked good in there. I don't think it's a walkthrough at all for a cowboy, obviously.
Agreed.
To win,
so. Absolutely agreed in there. Then we went to OSP pulling off another patented.
I'm gonna fall off my chair.
How many times can I say he's not gonna get another Von Flew? And bam, round number two, Oleonchuk coming in there first round, letting bombs go everywhere, hitting body shots, rocking
the
OSP.
The
Von Pru comes out in number two. God, he put it actually in his pocket. Von Pru actually took that risk and went for it. But Oleonchuk was gassing at that point. He was a first round front runner, and he really, gassed hard.
People are like, they know it's coming. That's not the one thing you train for. But I'm like, people train for arm bars against Ronda.
Love the Rousey.
You kind of think he is the Ronda Rousey? Like, it's
no, he's been by far way better. He's come back from many losses.
I just mean,
no.
The one thing he does. Like, and he just waited around. He turtled up.
Yeah.
Wore out. He knew he was going to take a bunch
of
hits.
Was a punching bag.
He just let himself do it and let the other guy wear out. And then he knew exactly what he was going to do.
Yep.
And he just trains it from every angle. He says he trains to come in on it from every angle. So he just waits and...
Beautiful joke.
Hey, don't punch yourself out the first round, everybody. Everybody that fights OSP. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I was so wrong about that fight. I had Oleanchikas everywhere.
As did I. Everywhere. So that didn't work out. But again, everybody's night was going hard at this point. Then we had Jan Kutalaba come in. Ground and pound finish. Round number one. Told you, if he gets this to the ground even once, it could be over for Roundtree. I was just expecting some of those bombs to land early. It was a hell of a firefight for the first 4 minutes. But as soon as it got to the ground, Roundtree, again, just incredibly deficient on the ground. I'm still not high on Kutalaba just because once it goes into the second round, his personality changes so much. But again, a front runner, if he's cruising, he's landing some heavy shots.
I like Jan Kutalaba as long as that's his game plan. If his game plan is to get you down and ground and pound, and that's a game plan right. for him, I like it. If he wants to stand and throw with people, I think he's going to get knocked out. I didn't love his hands, but I loved his ground game.
I agree. So tentative with
either
one of those
guys. And Roundtree,
same
way. I feel the opposite about him. I love Roundtree's hands. Hey, obviously, it's like, dude, if you can't get that part of your ground game together, high water mark has been reached.
Agreed. Then we went to Burns coming in short notice over Gunny Nelson. A lot of people saw it coming. He ended up turning out to be the favorite for all the right reasons. Better on the ground, better striker. Gunny just had a tough shot. He was going to have a much easier competitor who fell out. So, unfortunately for Gunny, he's in a weird position, but I think he has enough name recognition that he still has. He can be on
just
the free
like
fight.
Just like Cowboy.
Yeah, exactly.
Cowboy Oliveira. Are they in the same fight thing?
Four fights in a row, losing streak, and he'll still have another contract. They did already fight. He opened up that cut over Oliveira's
eyes.
So, yeah, that one went pretty according to plan, as did Madsen coming in as the co-main event. The silver medalist was everywhere. Of course he was going to beat a bum. We told you that. That wasn't hard. Favorite finally coming through. But Madsen, I mean, against high-level competition, we haven't seen it yet. So don't put all your eggs in that basket yet, because Danilo is not high-level, barely even UFC caliber.
And I'm just going to say, I think Madsen's juiced.
Oh, think?
Well, I think him fighting in the U.S., certain fighters, everyone, you're never going to see him in the United States.
Surprisingly, you're talking about that right now, because we're going to talk about that in the breakdown.
There is other people I actually want to talk about. I feel like I might get hate for some of the names I might say. But anyways, yeah, Mark Madsen, I feel like he's one of those guys that we will never see fight over here.
Then we had the main event coming through as a huge underdog, minus 250. Or plus 250 by it all the time it all came down. Jared Cannonier showing tons of that power. I especially loved all of the crystal energy out there weighing in with all sorts of Reiki sayings going on in there. He definitely believes in himself, and that power is coming through. Hermanson in that first round was like, oh, I can't take Cannonier down as easy as I wanted to. And this guy hits really hard. Those leg kicks, I think, more than anything, if you go look back, the leg kick set everything up for Cannonier as much as his checks. In that second round, right before the finish came, Jack Hermanson threw a kick that was checked beautifully by Cannonier. And Hermanson then shot in slowly, but I think it was extra hesitant just because his foot. And he ate an uppercut, and that was all she wrote. Ground and pound finish. Cannonier looking like a monster in there.
You're right. Jack Hermanson's usually the one with the more powerful leg kicks, but it was perfect timing on Cannonier's part. One of them, I was like, Hermanson broke his foot. It hit him dead on the knee.
Yep.
It was like the perfect check. I know exactly what you're talking about. And also, Jack Hermanson's entire leg, I'm like, he's not going to be able to stand on that by the third. It was purple AF. And I keep hearing people kind of not hate on Cannonier, but say I don't think he's championship level. Let's see him get through Yoel. And I feel like there's still that hate on Jack Hermanson. Like, Jack Hermanson's legit, you guys.
Agreed.
Getting through, to me, Cannonier getting through Jack Hermanson like he did, I feel like Robert Whittaker and Israel Adesanya, Paula Costa, Yoel Romero, all those dudes should be very, very scared. This guy, I was like, whoo, he's the real deal. Like,
he's coming into his own.
Yes, takedown defense. If he can keep it on his feet and that's what happens, scary.
Not just a boxer anymore in there.
His body looked on point. His cardio is through the roof. And he has the power to knock out heavyweights. Not all the guys can say that.
Very true. Very, very true. So, that was UFC Denmark.
We didn't do it. It's still 15 minutes long.
Yeah, we tried. We tried. It was tough. Good. But then we also have to talk a little bit about John Bones Jones back in the news again. His coach being all over the Instas talking about how he stole money from him. And so did Jackson Wink coach Greg Jackson, that there is money owed. And this is on site. It is on site. I see you, John Jones. We fight on site.
Who was saying it? The coach?
Oh, former striking coach of John Jones.
Yeah, what's his name? He's like the
Tank.
Tank, and he's going to open his own camp, and he's dirty, and John Jones owes him like $25,000 or something. I don't know. But I know Holly Holm came on and said that she stands with her camp, like always, and she's been at that camp since she was 16 years old.
Sure, because she's a big-time moneymaker. Of course they're not going to screw her over.
No, but I just mean 16, the same camp.
Yeah.
It's like, geez, maybe Holly Holm could be, like, it might benefit her to go so anywhere else. Anywhere else. The same camp?
Agreed.
Ah, man. Anyway, that was just really surprising to me. That's what I took from John Jones' feud. Holly Holm's been at that camp since she was 16.
How do you feel about John Jones threatening legalities? Mm-hmm. Saying, hey, you threaten me, I'm going to take you to court. That's John Jones. When a guy's like, dude, we will fight on sight.
I know you're a fighter, like, and he was like, John Jones, you and I both know you're not real.
That's what I'm just like, but then again, at the same time, it's like, dude, I get paid millions of dollars to fight. Why am I gonna fight you in the street?
Ever. I'm actually a professional fighter. Yeah. It's like, why don't you come paint my house? No, I'm a house painter. Like, why don't you come teach my kids? No, I'm a teacher. Like, yeah, I'm not going to fight you on the street for free. That's how I make my money. Exactly. And real quick, everyone, the Fight Pick Championships, it's a little something we're going to do with some fellow podcasts out there. So we're going to do the main card, and they're going to get scored in this way that you don't have to worry about right now. But to all of our listeners, you can probably listen to these other podcasts, and maybe they're talking shit about us. Maybe not yet, because, I mean, I'm not even talking about me. I had my worst week ever. But you, maybe, very scary. So we're going to have a whole, it's going to be like podcast versus podcast. We're almost starting our own Bloody Elbow. You know how they list all the their picks for their staff or MMA
junkies. Sure, we're having our own tournament, and it's going to be legit for bragging rights. We're going to see what the best podcast is out there. I feel like we could be front runners for the top dogs easily. It is going to be definitely in there with how many podcasts is it so far?
So it's going to be, if you guys, for MMA Marks, it's Ricky and Buddy. And then Fighting With Myself podcast, which is one dude, so there's three so far. Us two, Zoltanite and Weakneck Baby, follow us on Twitter while we're here, or at Lat B. So there's two of us, so that's five total. I don't know about the Backlog pod, if that's how many people's on it. I don't know about World Winning Fed. I don't know about Grampy Back, but that is an awesome name. And Cloud9. It's clever how they spelt their handle. So if you'll follow us, we'll retweet this stuff, and you can follow all these other people and maybe find some other MMA podcasts that you like as your second favorite podcast. So, yeah, that's it. That's the Fight Pick Championship breakdown.
Now we're getting into a heavy-duty pay-per-view breakdown here at Lat B. You know how we always do. It's going to be 11-card bout. We go from the bottom to the top. It is going to be headlined, though, by Israel Adesanya versus Robert Bobby Knuckles Whitaker. The Reaper himself is going to be headlining this at 185. But it starts off much, much lower than that at 135 pounds, where we have Khalid Taha coming in against debuting Bruno Silva. The Bulldog Silva is 11-3-1. He is coming off of a 3-fight winning streak. One was a split decision draw. So technically a 2-fight winning streak here as of late, decisioning a 18-12 fighter, also getting a finish in there over some 6-3 type fighters. Saw some of his regional scene stuff. The 29-year-old is a striker, Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy, which I haven't seen much on the ground. He's coming out of Team Nogueira, but I shit you not, when the Wolverine stance where he has his knives out, John Lineker-esque in there. Not that power. I don't even want to say John Lineker. More Wolverine stance. But that's how this guy throws his punches. From his hips from round one till round two or three. I didn't see too many go to three. He's beating up pretty regional guys in there, so takedowns didn't see much from him. But either way, I just absolutely didn't like anything from Silva. Taha has, though, been in there with heavy-duty opponents. The 13-2 fighters coming off of a win over Boston Salmon, a big underdog as of late 5 months ago, but losing his debut to Nadir Rahmani, where he got out-wrestled. He doesn't have to worry about getting out-wrestled here. He has to worry about a striker, and Taha's a stronger striker who's much more crisp in this. We tell you guys to stay away, but I'm pretty comfortable that Taha takes this via TKO round number two, maybe even number one. Just the strike accuracy. This Brazilian Silva comes in with his head on a center line and throwing heavy punches. It works for a while, but against a straight puncher, Taha's much more of that. You know I like those guys. Round number two. Give me the finish. Who do you have in this fight?
I have round number two as well. I might be staying away from it still, or still only go like 10% of my cards with Taha. I just don't want to sheath the bid on the first fight of the night.
On DraftKings, you're going to end up paying for the favorite $8,900. Bruno Silva's debuting fighter at $7,300. Silva, absolutely nowhere. We usually tell you guys to stay away. The -250 favorite is pretty steamed up in there, but at 8-9, I am going to have a little bit of exposure here because I do see likely a finish.
He's like one of those middle guys that you might have to afford, like when you're deciding at the end, the last fighter to pick, how much money you have left, and you're like, right, he's worth the most points.
And he has the ceiling. Taha has the ceiling to actually get the finish in here. So unlike the 125-pound bout where we have Nadia Kasim coming in against Ji Young Kim, woo, this is a dirty fight. I mean, do I even have to say it's going to be a dirty split? Because it's going to be a dirty split. 8-2-2. Kim's come in with her only wins in the UFC out of her four fights being split decisions. Both of those wins. That's brutal. Absolutely. Out of four fights in the UFC, she has never shot a takedown. She likes to keep it standing in there. The 29-year-old has lost to Lucy Pudilova. Then she got a couple wins over Justine Kish in a split decision. Fabiana, and then she last lost to Antonina Shevchenko. Well, that hasn't aged well as of late, so definitely.
Yeah, because I think that was Antonia's
debut.
So she won one, lost one, won one. Antonia.
Correct. Okay. Correct. So definitely, though, Kim doesn't come in with, she likes to keep it striking, has a jab, we'll double up on it, we'll throw a right every once in a while in there, but she's really just a kickboxer. We'll throw a body kick, nothing really high to the head. And against Kasim, the 187 5-1 fighter lost her debut to Montana De La Rosa via armbar 7 months ago, but Kasim came in with all sorts of great takedown defense, all sorts of a winning record over 0-0 fighters, finishing moms on the regional circuit, waitresses that were just there on a shift, and they're like, you want to make an extra $100?
They're podcast hosts.
That'll be $300. Thank you very much. Yeah. So, Kasim in here just looking complete. I mean, it made me think that De La Rosa was going to be Andrea Lee. That's how bad GB Kasim. So take that for what it's worth. Kasim just low level. I really don't think either one of these ladies is UFC caliber, but one of them's got to win. So it's really tough. This is a complete stay away. I think Kim King has more volume slightly than Kasim overall, but this is a super gross fight. I got Kim decision, big fat stay away. I don't really care what the betting lines are. It's just stay away. Dirty, dirty, dirty fight. I feel dirty just talking about it anymore. Who do you have in this fight?
I'm just going to go the other way. Kasim decision. And I think also stay away. I think this is pretty low level. Neither woman has really impressed me yet in the UFC. They've both been gimme fights for their regions of the world. And that's kind of what I think this is again. And that's why I have Kasim. I think if it goes to split, then the local girl's going to win. So, is it Australian? Is it all Australian? No Australian?
A lot of New Zealand fighters.
Yeah, that's not the same.
Not the same, but yeah. They in certain
Unless
situations.
Robert Whittaker, because he's half and half.
Well, but though the Australian fighter is Kasim here, so I like what you're saying against the South Korean.
Like, if it's going to be a split, which usually...
It worked out for me against Dalby last week.
It's a smart way to play. It's the reason we do, you know, we go through, like, the elevation, which we don't have to worry about here. Heat may be a factor. We're going to be in a big stadium. I don't know what the temperature is on the other side of the world right now.
I want to say... Australia has a real venue and not a tent outside in the desert.
No, they have a real venue, but if it's not, maybe not air conditioned.
Sure, I would. I don't know, honestly. I know that they're almost selling out, though. Almost, they're trying.
It's the Marvel Center. The only reason I remembered that at all is because I love comic books. And so it's like the Marvel Stadium. And I was wondering if it's going to be all cool inside, like decorated with like Spider-Man or the Hulk or something. It's also going to be packed to the brim, probably the biggest gate ever in UFC history, and it's at the biggest venue, you guys, one. And the other thing is, the tickets are like $40.
I was about to say they just price reduced them from $85 down to $35 is what I saw.
Oh, see, they're trying to fill it out. To give it the biggest
and
ever.
They've already rearranged the seating at Wombat MMA, a local... guy with who knows someone who works at the stadium saying they're giving away 10,000 tickets.
Mm.
So on top of bringing down the price, why did they do that to Florida? Come on, UFC.
I know, you got empty seats.
Damn, do that. Why'd you do that in Florida?
I know, go to radio shows and start handing out seats. That's what, I mean, there are so many, you guys, both UFC events we've been to in Florida have been like, and there's another one coming up, but there's been empty seats for days.
Wow. Absolutely, but we're getting $100 tickets. Easy. Easy door prices.
Easy $100. That's where I would say my piece of advice would be. If you're going to go to a UFC event, just wait outside until you might miss some fight or two, but you can buy tickets off someone for $25 because nobody else is buying those tickets outside.
100%.
Nobody else. It's almost like you're guaranteed to get tickets. There's somebody out there scalping them and... yeah.
They're outpricing themselves.
So that's what I say. Go for a scalper unless that's illegal, in which case, I'm just kidding.
Allegedly. No, you are kidding, not allegedly. But quickly back to DraftKings, we're going to actually have Kimby the favorite here, minus 185, 8,700 against Kasim, 7,500. Do not waste your money on this fight.
No, stay away.
Then we go to 145 pounds featherweight, where we have Megan Anderson going back home against debuting Zara Farren Dos Santos. Dos Santos is 6-2 fighting out of France. She has a loss in there, split decision, but is coming off of a 3-fight winning streak, TKO, over the co-workers of the other lady, the other bartenders and hostesses in there. She's fighting ladies with barely records, and she, I don't believe I saw her ever take a shot in there. She likes to mainly keep it striking. She'll actually triple up on a jab really well. Gas tank hasn't been well. Saw a lot of clinching, and in the clinches I'd see on the regional stuff wasn't good. I mean, there was ladies she was fighting in there when she hit them once or twice. They were curling up with not even a red mark showing. They just were ultra low-level opponents. I think UFC's taking a really big step back in realizing with Megan Anderson they have somebody that's very marketable, but they can't feed her to Holly Holm in her first couple dang fights. They got to give her people she can win, and this is about as set up as it gets in here.
And if you want to fall out, it's like, remember how many takedowns Holly Holm got in that fight?
Exactly.
They might be all the takedowns in her whole career.
And yeah, you'll be like, Holly Holm has 98% takedown accuracy, and you're like, oh, because she fought Megan Anderson once.
Good point.
So it skewed the numbers there. So Megan Anderson off of her back, we know, has tons of issues. Felicia Spencer coming in as a huge underdog as of late, getting it done in the first round, rear naked choke 4 months ago. Prior to that, though, we had the toe that poked Kat Zingano, made her a one-dyke cat in there for a little while. It was controversial, gave us a little bit of a boost in Megan saying, oh, maybe she's gotten better at takedown defense. We didn't get to see much, but we don't have to worry about that at all here. Again, setup fight. I have a TKO round number two, but I don't think Dos Santos is UFC caliber of a fighter. It's actually really interesting to me how many debuting fighters we have on this pay-per-view card. Because this is a pay-per-view. And up I mean, the co-main event's the only one where I feel like it's co-main event and main event are the most veteran guys on this entire card.
But it's like they also are pulling, like, South Korean and Kim, Megan Anderson, like, people from all over
that part the of the
region.
World.
And, like, building, like, they're superstars not on this side of the world. But I do think Megan Anderson is kind of big in Australia. Jake Matthews, Dan Hooker. And then, of course, Bobby Knuckles and Adesanya. But I think Megan Anderson is one of those people that... But the other thing, this is her local, but she doesn't live there anymore. She actually, you know, trains with the... she's not at Rufus, is she? She trains in the United States.
In the United States. I can't remember the camp off the top of my head, but she's been here for a little while. She actually... lives in the United States as well. She's got her visa, so she's going back home to Australia to visit.
So you say this is a gimme fight for her? KO round one kind of gimme?
I can see
I'm not trusting Megan Anderson anymore, and don't let this win fool you either. And that Kat Zingano, that should have... if any, we see some fights that are egregious, that should have been one that was maybe no contest. It was just a weird... I mean, I know you're allowed to kick somebody in the head, but are you allowed to poke somebody in the eye?
UFC's trying to give Megan Anderson wins. UFC's trying, whatever they can.
And I like her. Her personality seems like she'd be a really fun girl to hang out with.
Agreed. Agreed. Very tall. 6 foot.
I don't mind looking up. I think she's beautiful. I can't believe I don't bring that up with her more than the other.
There's a lot of people that have controversial stances on her because she has a big Insta following, and it's because she has a lot of long-legged booty shots. I ain't on no booty shots.
Lingerie on.
Gedalia, all you girls, I spread the love. I love everybody out there. You know me. Bitch, go ahead. Keep them booty shots coming out, girl.
Yeah, it's just like, geez, man, this is how the ladies are getting. That's like part of the lady thing. Don't hate on how they're getting followers. Don't hate. Like, it's lady fighting. It doesn't have to have the same rules as guy stuff. But I don't think she's like nudie or putting anything out there. I think she's a sexy lady. But I actually see her get a lot of hate because guys are like, I don't know why people say Megan Anderson's hot.
Because she's hot. It's because she's hot.
It's because she's a sexy lady.
But that plays into the DraftKings just a little too much. 9,400 for the minus 450 favorite. I mean, everybody sees Dos Santos being low caliber in here. 6,800 for the big, big underdog. As you're saying, you can't trust her. Her average is 37 points on DraftKings for 9-4.
I'm putting Dos Santos on a card.
Not a honestly bad option.
It's the same thing. I bet the top fighter of the last 10 fight cards on DraftKings, whatever the most expensive, right? Shit the bed.
Very true. Very true. All of these most ranked fighters have not done well in their counterparts have definitely come
through. Janet Jackson used to have this song, "What Have You Done For Me Lately?" And that's how I feel about Megan Anderson.
True. Very, very careful with that. Low exposure if you have it.
Like, Dos Santos has nothing to lose. She could come out there. She could just have a 3 on a scale of 1 to 10 takedown game, and Megan's fucked. Just saying.
I didn't see it out
Anderson
there, but
Anderson KO round true. 1. Because she is a veteran, she's UFC, she's under the lights, but she just scares me to death. Don't go heavy on her.
At all. Then we're moving on to 155 pounds, where we have a double debut. This is short notice. They put it together last minute. This is one of those interesting ones where we're going to have both of these fighters fighting out of the region, though, where we have Jamie Malarkey fighting out of Australia against Brad Riddell fighting out of New Zealand, but he's coming over with the City Kickboxing guys. He's 6-1, only losing a submission armbar over a year ago, coming off a 3-fight winning streak, getting a lot of TKOs. He is training with Adesanya, Kaikara France, all these guys, getting better. Really like his intercepting knees in there. He was showing some good breakdowns as well, was Riddell. Riddell also training at a Tiger Muay Thai in Thailand, setting up camps out there. So he's getting high-level partners out there. I mean, beautiful intercepting knee finish that he had in there, if you go back and take a look. He found out, though, I believe I watched Kaikara France giving his paperwork about 2 weeks ago. So he knew he was going to get ready. He just didn't know how much. And Malarkey was in the same boat. Malarkey coming in and having a 4-fight winning streak, the 12-2 fighter mainly likes to keep it striking, wearing sorts of Muay Thai shorts in there, fighting out of Magnus. I think we've seen a couple other guys out of there, but they haven't fared too well. With Malarkey, he can get hurt, leaves his head on a straight line a little bit more, likes to brawl, has power. Actually, I really liked his left hook in here.
Phuket is actually the city where Brad Riedel trained out of.
Yeah, it is. But Riedel here, I just see outmatched grappling specifically. It's already been a problem for him against Riedel. Just being better all around, I kind of see. Give me Riedel decision right now. I think both of these guys can do all right. I do see, though, Malarkey just kind of teetering out where the potential, the bigger growth is going to be in Riedel, the slight plus or minus 160 favorite. Who do you have in this fight and why? It's a close one. It's a double debut.
Yeah, I like that Riedel has the decision. I'm going to go decision here just because Malarkey weighed in small last time, so I'm guessing he's going up in weight class just to get in the UFC, which, cool, schmoll. I'm going to go with Brad Riedel decision. I'm not going to go heavy on this fight anywhere, but I think this has the potential to be the fight of the night because they're two unknowns in a big, huge arena that have nothing to lose.
Right.
You know, it's kind of great. It's like an exciting fight.
I totally agree. And I can see myself actually moving, looking into it. I did catch actually Riedel's finish over against UFC fighter. Was it? One of the songs who's now had, I think it's 2-3 or 2-1 in the UFC.
One of the Silvas.
Finished him with a beautiful left body shot. But Riedel just has cleaner combinations, more traps in there. Though on DraftKings for the decided favorite, you're going to end up paying $8,600 against Malarkey, $7,600. Out of the two finishing, I see Riedel being the more likely. Riedel, I don't know how to pronounce it because in English it would be Riddle, but I heard it being pronounced Riedel and Riedel out of the regional scenes. So that was his area.
I could see Riedel with the long I because the double D's and the E. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Riddler. That's what I would say in America. And so since that's not his nickname, I'm going to say his name's Riedel. Because if his name was Riddle,
I agree.
His name would have to be the Riddler. I just don't like that a double debut and then one guy's this much of a favorite. But I also tend to think when the odds are like known like this for two unknown fighters, maybe the people in their area know who's the better fighter by who they've fought, like in the local circuits that they've fought in. So I'm going to take your advice here, but I'm probably not going to go heavy. For a new guy to be worth 8-6 is a little steep for me.
It's a little steep. I'm going to probably go 20% on Riedel in there. Low, no exposure to Malarkey in there. It just seems like it's going to be a bunch of Malarkey.
I was waiting. It didn't fit well.
So, moving on to a welterweight bout.
Let me see. I will say it before the show's over.
So we're moving on to 170 pounds, the welterweight division, where we have Callan Potter coming in against debuting contender series hopeful Mika Patillo coming in and having a 12-4 record coming out of that Hawaiian scene, facing all sorts of monsters in there, getting a couple losses via finish and submission. He got stung with a left hook and, I mean, put flat out earlier in his career, but has since then won some, lost some, on a 3-fight winning streak as of late, fighting in Bellator. In the contender series, he finished Sumpner in a TKO left hooks due to body shots. That's one thing that Patillo does well. He attacks the body hard with tons of power, and then after a good 2 or 3 body shots, he'll throw up a beautiful right hand just to keep your hands where they shouldn't be. And against Potter, he was a short notice replacement in his last fight. The 17-8 fighter came in against Jalen Turner week of, because his opponent fell out the week of, and he was like, all right, I'm 35 years old, I don't care, I knew I'd be here. We all saw getting fed to the lions in there, and I think the UFC does it again. They say, we promised you a second fight. We say this all the time. We knew you were going to get eaten alive. They don't have to fly you to Las Vegas. You're in your hometown. Cool. We don't even have to put you in a room and board. This is your second loss. Time for you to get on out of here. Their young up-and-comer gets a disgusting finish.
Like, there's clubs in Los Angeles. Like, I think the whiskey that everyone's like, oh, we played the whiskey. You know, like, it's a band thing. We play. But to play the whiskey, you have to sell 100 tickets.
Okay.
You know, so right. The club ends up making money by, like, you're allowed on stage. Right. But
you can buy 50 of them tickets. Literally yourself.
Yeah, like, you have to, then you can get on stage and say, we played the whiskey.
Sure.
That's kind of what he probably had to, they were like, look, we'll let you fight again, but you have to sell 100 tickets.
He's like, got it. Again, give me 25 of those tickets for me. Right now, I can get 75
of those. Will you just take my pay and put in 4 tickets?
So, Potter, though, he mainly likes to strike in there. Doesn't have the best chin. Has been hurt to the body on other shots. Regional guys were able to do that to him. Jalen Turner picked him apart. I see Patillo doing a lot of the same. A lot of people see that in there. The big two, the one favorite in there. I mean, I see a dismantling TKO round number one. I think it's going to probably be body shots. Who do you have in here and
same,
why?
Same, I got that coconut bombs.
Definitely.
Coconut bombs. That's what he calls his hands. I picture where someone's like, what about if your nickname was bombs? And he's like, I don't like bad things. Like, I don't want to kill people. What about coconut bombs?
That sounds
That's
right.
That's it.
That sounds right.
That's Pitolo.
At 9,000, these debuting fighters, we don't like to bet on heavy as we were just talking about. But against Potter, I feel fairly confident. Not as much as I should. I'll probably go 20% with Patillo, but 0 with Potter. I just see the floor being much higher for Micah here. What are you going to do on DraftKings as far as this one's concerned?
I don't like that heavy. I do see Potter obviously being the weaker guy. He doesn't care if he gets outstruck. He doesn't care if he gets finished. I just don't like when the energy of, like, this old guy in the ring and he's going to go out there and be crazy and the other guy has something to prove. I have Pitolo KO round one. I'm probably going to go 30%. 20-30%. I'm going to still go low on it.
You're going to have Pitolo. Oh, right. I like that. I like that as well. Super low. This is a pay-per-view. We usually tend to go heavier on pay-per-views, but I feel like this is a card we still back off on just because there's so many intangibles with so many new fighters. That's why I'm like, this is a weird pay-per-view. We're a lot of guys have regional records.
And the fight starts at like 10 a.m. their time. Usually it always goes off at night, whatever city it's in.
Right.
Kind of, and but yeah, it starts really early for them.
And for the American fighters, some of them do have a 22-hour flight to get there the week of. I don't care who you are. That's going to mess up your schedule.
Yeah.
That's an intangible we do have to think about.
Yeah, we'll talk about it when we get to those fighters. Al Iaquinta is one of those guys that he said he got there a week sooner than he did last time he fought in Australia.
Exactly. Exactly. Great point. So nothing left with that last one. Then we go to the headlining preliminary bout. Quickly, as I was going to say, though, real quick, it is 10:30 their time. Eastern Standard Time is going to be 6:30 p.m., so it's still going to be a really late night over here on the East Coast for a pay-per-view.
You think it'll be a later one?
It'll be a 1 a.m. for finishing it up, maybe 1:30.
Really?
Yeah, huh. Yeah.
It's been a long time since a late night. ESPN's so good about it.
Agreed.
Loved UFC life since ESPN. Kudos, ESPN. My Brennan Shaw would be, I'd like to give a shout out to ESPN.
So, moving on to 170 pounds, the headlining preliminary bout. We have Jake Matthews coming in against Rustam Akman. Akman being 6-1, losing his debut in the UFC to Sergey Klitschko. Decision 4 months ago, there was another debut fighter, the 27-year-old.
I forgot. I just was looking at the thing, and look at, I have his name as Pitolo, too. I just didn't change that when I was doing him. So, oops, ignore that.
Just remember, the hairiest wolfman ever. We talked about it before. Ever.
It's so gross.
So gross. I mean, he
If you look
won.
At Jake Matthews' face right here, it looks like he's thinking about his hair sweater.
It is disgusting. Askham is just gnarly. Doesn't even try to trim it.
No, he don't but his give a face hook. In the picture that we have it's, in the graphic,
yeah.
His face looks like he's lazy and doesn't give a shit.
Oh, it's so gnarly.
So rough.
Definitely wearing I'll a sweater
fix that
in there.
Beforehand.
But either way, in here, as we've been saying, these setup fights have been happening. A lot can be said as far as what we said for the last fight, where they gave Potter a second fight. I think Askham's in that same boat. They were like, hey, you're going to fight another debuter because you're local in Australia. Jake Matthews, who only fights out of the U.S. because of steroids. This is one of those guys that will never fight in the States ever again. And you can look at his body type at why. It's unbelievable he gets down to 170. He could easily be a 185er in there. Cuts hard, but it really pays off. He's been coming in losing as of late, having a 14-4 record to Rocco Martin. We told you Rocco Martin would get it done in there, finishing Jake Matthews 9 months ago. But Matthews can get some winning streaks together in there. He's a judoka with some all right strikes, good slams, and his best path to victory is ground and pound. Raskam has solid takedown defense, but he hasn't really seen takedowns from UFC caliber competition and been beat already. The local scene guys, again, that's nothing. By far, leaps and bounds is Jake Matthews better here. It's just a setup fight. I was thinking decision, then I came to my senses and I'm like, it's a setup fight against a steroided out monster who's going to get in there, get him to the ground, then land some dirty elbows in that half guard. Jake Matthews does the best, especially if it's side control. I see an elbow finish. Round number one or two, probably going to go number two. Giving a little credit to Askham here. Give me Jake Matthews everywhere.
Wow.
I like him
here. I don't know why I can't feel Jake Matthews out. I just never seem to get him. Like, I know the people that are going to beat him, but I never, ever think he's going to win. It's a really rough. So I know he's not going to win here. Or I know he's going to win here, but I just don't think it's going to be the blowout everybody thinks it is. He just doesn't seem to show up, or he seems to choke under pressure. I do think he's steroided out, so we'll obviously have the better cardio here, but maybe Ackman trained or something and did some, you know, he made it to decision in his last fight, didn't he? Or did he
get
submitted?
Against another debuter, though. Not a Jake Matthews who's had 9 fights in the UFC.
But it looks like he's gone against guys with legitimate records, where the guys that, besides Yin Liang, who we beat, he hasn't really beat anyone else, Jake Matthews. He's kind of, I mean, Anthony Rocco Martin, but he got beat. So right. I'm not as high on him. I got Matthews' decision. I might have him on one or two cards. I do see him getting some takedowns, but I think he's just as much in a threat of getting submitted himself, which makes me a little nervous here. I do think he has the better hands. He has seemed to grow. He's still only 25 years old. Matthew's decision, it just makes me nervous. I'll still probably go about 30% on him.
I agree with that 100%. At 9,100, the decided favorite, minus 2,800 against Askham, 7,100. I don't see any betting value in Askham. I don't really see a puncher's chance really in it. Matthews is a bit chinny. I mean, he has been not only finished via submission a few times, Kevin Lee knocked him out with a throw. So Matthews is one of these front runners that we just saw with Oleonchuk, where if he starts to see adversity, he gives up in there. He lets positions get taken over on him. But if he does well, he will run over people. 30%, I like what you're saying for Matthews. Askham.
Maybe 20. I don't know.
If you're not liking and subscribing, that's all we're asking. At Zoltanite, at WeakneckBaby, at LatB_MMA. On Instagram, Twitter is where you're going to be finding us. We're going to have our cards out for you guys. We're now a part of the league to see what's the best podcast in there. I still need to get the name. The Fighting
it's not the
Championship.
Best podcast.
Or the Best Picking Podcast.
Yeah. Best Picks.
Best Picks. What's the competition? I'm still not rolling off of my tongue
Fight
yet.
Picks Championship.
The FCP Championship. Yeah. For the best picks in the game, and they're going to be
or
judged.
FPC.
FCP.
No, Fight Picks Championship.
Fight, but it's red Fight Championship picks.
But it, see, it's like fight picks.
And then interesting. Yeah, we need clarification.
Like hockey. Cup. Championship.
I like it. I like it. We, different views, different strokes for different folks. So, FPC.
Potato, potato.
In the main card, we're going to have 5 bouts. You're going to have to pay a good, cool 65 to 70 bones American on that ESPN feed or whatever way you're going to have to find it in there. Interestingly enough, it's going to start with the heavyweights in a dirty double debut, a double dose of those debuters. Again, starting the pay-per-view, and they're expecting this to be a high-selling pay-per-view. Doesn't make ton of sense other than they're trying to stack it with finishes because these are heavyweights.
And it is Australia versus the world, kind of like we always say that it
which
should
we
be.
Love.
Yeah.
We absolutely love. So we got to take the hometown advantage here for the local Australians. If it goes to the scorecards, it is going to play in their favor. But when you're having a 3-0 record in there with Justin Taffa coming in against George De Castro in there only having a 5-0 record. Taffa's coming in with, again, that 3-0. He's mainly a striker, has over, I think, 30 to 40 bouts in striking. His claim to fame, training with Mark Hunt, all of those boys. Mm-hmm. Tyson Pedro, Tai Tuivasa, they're all in his corner. Watched every single one of his fights on the regional scene. He was fighting 0-0 fighters, guys with 5-3 records, but still much lower strikers. And when he got on the ground, I was actually surprised. Taffa in his first bout against the bodied up heavyweight, he actually shot a mean single leg takedown, took it down well, went right over to mount and landed some good ground and pound, but was quickly reversed in there. Taffa doesn't mind going to the ground. And out of all of those boys that I just said that he trains with, none of them do what he does in there. So it's really interesting. Taffa is kind of sticking out on his own to me as far as that camp that I kind of like to want to fade. So he does like to get to the ground. Even's got a ground and pound finish, which was garbage. But Taffa sets up good counters in there, a good striker, great uppercut if he finds it, and is very methodical in there. You can see he's had a lot of fights. He doesn't just run in throwing power shots. He sets up his combinations really well in there. But the debut we're coming in against the Cape Verde Massachusetts fighter, Castro came in on the Contender Series and was one of the biggest underdogs of the night, coming through finishing the American Top Team standout. Ever since this fighter moved to the States, New England, he says he's turned it around. He's fighting for a family. He's got kids. Saw his regional fights. There was winning records in there. What I really, really liked about Castro was the same reason I picked him on the Contender Series fight, is his leg kicks. He's the type of kicker who will kick you on your back rear leg, and that just takes everything out of you. He really spams that leg kick a little more than I would like, though, where he leaves his chin a little open just to land that kick. But it adds up quickly, where all of a sudden, when Castro starts to get his strikes going into the middle of the rounds, he has a lot of success, but that's because guys are like, I can't fucking take that kick anymore. So he's a heavyweight who really uses his kicks well. I think he's going to try to utilize them here, but Taffa can check kicks. He has that type of kick registrar. I am really tentative on this fight. I like the movement of Castro. I don't think he can take it to the ground. Striking-wise, Taffa looks like he gets more tired out of both of these fighters. I like Castro here as a slight underdog. This is a coin flip of a fight as it stands right now, and I see absolutely why, but it's also a dirty double debut. I think you got to have exposure to both guys. Give me the slight underdog in Castro here. Tentative here. I'm going to probably be exposed because I see a finish either way. I don't see this going to a decision. It's going to be a fun one. Who do you have in this fight and why?
How's Castro's ground game?
Didn't see much of it because when he keeps it up.
Nervous. That's what makes me the most nervous.
But he has good takedown defense, the little bit I did see.
He's going against have no records, but neither guy kind of has gone against anyone with any records.
Right?
Ugh, it's super nerve-wracking. I got to think Taffa has at least guys in his camp that are legit heavy hitters, heavy guys, big guys that are doing their thing in the UFC. If you watch Castro's fight and you saw his leg kicks, anyone could see him as well. I do like that he was on the Contender Series. I feel like it shakes out some of those nerves. He is going to be far away from home, and it also leads me to believe a guy that's as new as him into fighting, he probably doesn't have the money to fly over to Australia really early, and I'd even bet he's one of the last guys that shows up there. Bigger, older. I'm going to go Taffa, and I'm actually going to go by a nasty, slow decision. I think it's going to get really boring after the first round. The hometown advantage slowly takes over. And I think on the feet, Taffa will kind of handle his own. But you say his takedown might be, at least we've seen him on the ground.
Right.
That it looks a little different. Set up fights, Australia versus the world. I can't decide. And for a coin flip, I'm not only going to go with the favorite, I'm going to go with the hometown guy. So Taffa decision.
Hometown guy swinging. I love that you're putting that in there as well. Taffa being 8,300 as the minus 125 slight favorite against the underdog, plus or minus 105, 7,900. I'm going 20-20 on this. Actually, I'm going 30-20 Castro just because it's a slight underdog and it gives me a better 10-10. Price.
I may do 10-10 on it just because. But Castro, the other thing, these guys are hard to finish going over there. I could see him burning through his cardio in the first round, swinging away. Mm-hmm. And then Taffa just kind of controlling the next two rounds. Yeah, I think this might be low scoring. I'm seeing like 40.
If it goes to decision, that's horrible. That's going to be a horrible card. So...
But you think knockout, so that's like, I'm like, so you gotta put better. One. So much better, yeah.
So interesting. Wow, yeah. That's what I'm saying, DraftKings, I'm not gonna go the heaviest.
I might say away totally, but you sway me like, okay, I'll 10-10 just because I could, if there's gonna, obviously the knockouts with the points, but.
Definitely gonna be the way to get it done in there. Moving on to 170 pounds, we have returning Luke Jimmo coming in against Diego Lima, the longtime veteran.
The lesser Lima.
You beat me to it.
I knew. When I was making the gifs or the pictures, I was thinking the lesser Lima. I almost put it on there.
The 14-7 Lima in here. It's coming off of a 2-fight winning streak over Chad Lapree and Court McGee in a dirty split. What we got right here. Lima's finally turned it around in there. We told you on the ground he has deficiencies in there, but he's finally getting that cardio and takedown defense under control, having better volume and just looking more comfortable at 28 years old in there. There's just times Lima has had brain farts in there that if you literally take a second to think, that's a second too late, and that's where he eats a body shot or a kick that changes the game. Now that he's able to keep the fights where he wants to, he's by far usually the better striker. And against the Jedi, Jimmu in here, he's going to be the better striker. Jimmu has had a couple fights in the UFC now, beating... who is it in here? Dachi Abe. And then losing his second fight to Steele, but also beating Anzani in a decision. Yeah, I don't believe the Japanese fighters in the UFC anymore, but Jimmu having a lot of hype coming in and really having underwhelming performances just because of the lack of his output. On the regional scene, he was finishing a lot of guys, showing a lot of good ground and pound if he could get it there, but really just being a striker. And here, I don't think he has good enough takedowns to take it down, especially with the revamped Lima's takedown defense. And striking wise, I see him being having lower output, not pulling the trigger as much, and not having as much power. So I kind of see him losing on all fronts. So I have this pretty decided for Lima. I have a decision right now, Lima. If it's not 30-27, I could even see a late third round finish of just accumulation, just because. Look back at all of the strike statistics back for Jimmo. Low output type of a guy. He just stands in front of his fighters. He just doesn't pull the trigger. And Lima is not at that point of his career. Lima is starting to get off in there. So he's coming into his own. He's still the lesser Lima, but he's better than Jimmo. Give me the slight favorite here.
He's been on a win streak, but he's on a win streak against Chad Lapree and Court McGee. So, take it for what it is. I think this is going to be another dirty split. I don't feel even super heavily about it, and it's weird because I think it's going to be a split. I want to put Lima, but then the local guy, I'm like, ugh. Mm-hmm. If I picture it going to split decision, should I pick the guy from New Zealand? I'll go with Lima decision over, he has been in the UFC, definitely has the veteranship here, and he should be hitting the sweet spot of his career. He should be where everything's coming together, and he you know, is training with some badass people. So come on, Lima, let's do this. Right, but I never feel confident. The more we get into this fight, the more I'm like, this might be a parlay night. I don't think DraftKings for sure not going to play heavy.
I think it's
Can't even put together five fights I really feel confident.
Well, that's what I was about to say. I'm picking 4 to 5 fights that I'm confident in, and then I'm throwing in the guys that are 50-50, both cards, mixing it up a bit. Again, I'm not betting the steepest cards, though, because this is a night to save my money. There's going to be other shots in here. But mid-range, what I was going to say is I feel like I'm leaving over $400 to $900 in salary cap, and it's absolutely okay because it's that type of night. I guarantee it. On DraftKings, you're going to end up paying $8,400 for the slight favorite in Diego Lima.
We don't guarantee anything. We don't guarantee here.
True. Very true. We don't guarantee here.
Don't try to sue me.
Luke Jamoubian, $7,800 on DraftKings. So I got Lima because I could see the finish. I'm going to probably do around 30%.
Fuck you, Jamu.
Jamu. Then we're going to move up to 265 pounds where we have returning Tai Tuivasa coming in against Sergey Spivak. Spivak, the polar bear, coming in at a 9-1 record, only losing in the UFC to Walt Harris. Big ticket, got it done. As of late, TKO via knees and punches 4 months ago, but finally Walt Harris putting it together. Spivak, being young at 24 years old, just not really seeing that level of competition in there. I think that Walt Harris was being undervalued in that specific spot, but Spivak has also just not been training with the best Ukrainian fighters. Again, some of his records being against 255 and 52 record guys, so obviously bullshit guys he's been fighting. Spivak, striking-wise, leaves a lot of openings on the ground. He can do stuff against some regional guys, but I don't think he has good takedowns when he gets it there or even good trips. He mainly likes to strike. And against Tai Tuivasa, he's somebody who was super pushed, got a couple wins against Rashad Coulter, who hasn't gone anywhere, had a controversial decision over Andre Arlovsky in his hometown. Then came in against Dos Santos and got upset finished in there. And then as of late, also, if you're following at Zolt tonight, you know I had Santos and Ivanov against Tai Tuivasa because Tai Tuivasa is a front runner. He's one of these guys after this first round gasses badly. It's been proven time and time again. If he's really putting it on you and his opponent, like a Rashad Coulter, is gassing harder than him by being a punching bag, yeah, he'll be able to get him to finish him in there. But if Tai meets opposition, he just doesn't have the tools and the cardio to go deeper into those rounds. But I don't think we have to worry about that with Spivak. We were talking about setup fights. I see this being another setup fight. We're trying to give a local fighter another big win here. I got Tai Tuivasa round number 2 just because I think Spivak is a punching bag until a knee or something that comes through. I'm not very confident here, but it's just because Spivak ain't it. Spivak ain't it.
It kind of seem like the same way Walt Harris finished him can be the exact same way Tai Tuivasa. Yep. Like what, Tai clinch behind the neck and just brutal.
Or even uppercuts, exactly. But yeah, that clinch, but Spivak just isn't.
You know what, though?
That
Tai Tuivasa gives me the same feeling as Megan Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
He's sexy.
No, I like it.
He gives me the same feeling as Megan Anderson, where it's like, gosh, he just hasn't really. The first few fights, like, he came out of the gate too hot or something, and some of them were questionable wins. He gets totally hurt in there. I feel really nervous about this. Sergey, it's just some of the skill set that he has. I wonder how Tai Tuivasa's takedown defense is. It seems like, yeah, it's been okay. He's been in there with good guys. His rugby should make his cardio good. We hope he's getting better. Maybe he's only 26. Like, maybe this stuff's changing. But this fight just makes me a little more nervous than it should. I feel like it's the odds are off. Like, it should be maybe 2-1, maybe. I'm going to go with Tai Tuivasa. Oh, gosh. I just feel like he gets low-scoring decisions, and that's what I think this is going to be.
I think you're 100% right in that assessment. The line is totally off here, and it's way too steep for a person like Tai Tuivasa in here.
I could see the setup, though, too.
Right. On DraftKings, for the decided favorite, -365, you're going to end up paying $9,300 for Tai Tuivasa against Spivak, $6,900. I think you can only play Tai Tuivasa, but for that price, again, I'm not going to pay $8,400 for Megan. Does Tai have a more chance of knocking someone out? probably, but it's 10%. Yeah. 10%. I'm going to probably go out of tie. Spivak, 0%. Again, this
it's
night is a big
like
fat
tie
stay
to
away.
Mufasa, like this next fight we're about to talk about with Al Daniel. It's almost like both those guys are almost guaranteed more points than Tai Tuivasa unless he finishes.
And right,
regardless
it was a decision,
of how they finish.
Right. Totally agreed. Totally agreed. On to the co-main event, as you were alluding to, we have Al Ayakinta coming in against Daniel, the Hangman Hooker. Hooker coming off of a big win as of late, the 18-8 fighter last knocked out James Vick with a left hook 2 months ago. Prior to that, took a beating of a lifetime against Edson Barboza. When we were telling you here, Edson is just a different level of striker. But Hooker having some marquee wins earlier on in his career against Jim Miller. What was it in there? James Vick being one of those. Gilbert Burns, who's on a new run. Which, little shout out, Gilbert Burns. Motherfucking man. Just beat Gunny, got home, and they're like, hey, someone fell out of this fight. And he's like, hey, I know a guy. Not kidding. That guy, they filled him, and he's like, hey, someone else fell out. Hey, guys, give me a call. That's how you do it. That's how a grown man UFC fighter does it. None of this two-year taking off all that garbage. Dorinho is living his best life in there, getting it done at 170 pounds. Absolutely love it. But moving back to the fight at 155 pounds, Daniel the Hangman likes to keep it standing. Beautiful knees. Great clinch. Coming out of the City Muay Thai scene, there's a bunch of these City, three of these City Muay Thai guys fighting throughout the night. The main event being one of those as well. Hooker, dirty elbows on the ground, showing that he also has good top. Off of his back, I believe he's a purple belt now. Has had a triangle or two, even a guillotine in there. But against Al Ayakinta, who has shown some lapses against Mitch Clark, really is a solid, fundamentally sound, I think, black belt out of Sarah by this point. But been a long time D1 wrestler in there. Hooker, though, has a great jab, good power. His gas tank, though, has been an issue for me in multiple other fights. Going outside of the first round, Daniel Hooker has lost 5 of 6 fights that have gone out of the first round. That was a stat that I was really surprised to see as well. Can't give a shout out to who gave me that stat earlier, but it was a fun one floating around in there. Dan Hooker is a finisher in there, but if he can't get it done, his output increases dramatically after that first round. He's a good striker, but this is MMA in there. Al Ayakinta coming in with a 14-5 record, coming off of a loss to Donald Cerrone, but getting a big win over Kevin Lee in a demolishment in there, losing to Khabib on short notice, going all 5 rounds with the champ in there, one of the best showings anyone's ever had. Al, reality.
Isn't that so crazy? One of the best showings anyone ever had.
On a day's notice. Khabib. On a 1 day's notice. Literally under 24 hours.
He looked like shit. But it's just crazy. That's all good Khabib is. It's mind-blowing.
Unbelievable. But Cerrone really just put him in his place, where I see people drawing similarities, Hooker to Cerrone, and I don't see that other than the clinch potentially, but I see Cerrone being a much better wrestler and grappler, even having better takedowns, where Hooker doesn't really do that as much. I think maybe only one takedown in his career.
I agree. Cerrone better ground, Hooker better hands. Donald probably has better kicks.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So here, this is really interesting because I feel like, as far as the size, Al, and I know who's his main freaking Longo. I know Ray Longo flew out Monday morning, but Ray Longo was specifically talking about how they had taller guys. And also, Daniel Hooker has had trouble where guys crowd him. When guys crowd Daniel Hooker and get right in his face, he has trouble. And that's what you do with long guys. That's what you do with James Vick. Justin Gaethje, you get right in front of his face because his long limbs, his only option is to elbow you. But then if you're a better grappler, well, all of a sudden you have an advantage there. I feel like Al Ayakinta can put that type of a game plan, can get him pushed there, has a better gas tank, has better grappling. I am a little scared with the power and the setups of Dan Hooker because Dan Hooker does have power. But I think that the further this fight goes on, the more it goes into Al's favor. I got a decision, round number 3, for the underdog, plus 125. I haven't had a plus money, plus stuff for a while. You got one. You're welcome. It's going to be Mr. Al Ayakinta. Let's get it done now, Realty. Let's asshole, baby.
It's so crazy because usually I think the Puestas do better when I agree, and this time I agree. Woo! Again. The only thing that scares me about Daniel Hooker with Al is his reach advantage and the size. Even Al Iaquinta said that he didn't know who Dan Hooker was the first few times he saw them in the UFC, and he actually thought he was a 170er because of how huge he is in person. But Al's one of the more honest guys, where he's one also said Kevin Lee could be a champion if he'd get out of his own way. Just to hear that about somebody.
He also said, I'd never fight Khabib for more than $1 million. And then they're like, here's $1 million. He's like, I'll fight Khabib.
I guess.
I'll fight Khabib on a day's notice.
I like Al. I like that he got there early, the week earlier, because he said last time he was in Australia, right at fight day, he just started to feel okay. And that was way too cutting it close. So this time he got there a week earlier, which I like. Losing to Cowboy. Cowboy's one of the best fighters in the world. But he's so emotional. If he's on, he could be the world champion. If he's off, some of the lowest guys in the division can beat him. So it's just like, he was on that night with Al, and I don't take anything away from Al Iaquinta for that loss. And making it to decision with Cowboy is not too shabby. I think Al can keep the fight exactly where he wants it, and I think he's going to have better hands here by far. I think he's going to figure out how to get in the inside and use boxing to pick Dan Hooker apart. I think Dan Hooker throws with so much power. He does gas, and that's kind of... I think Al's hands are better than Edson Barboza's, and Edson Barboza kind of picked Daniel Hooker apart.
Tacticianed him apart.
Yeah.
Totally put a clinic on him,
and
I agree.
I think Al's hands are that kind of good. He doesn't have the leg kicks that Edson has, but I think his hands are even better. So Daniel Hooker, I do think he has a hard body, because I can't even believe how many shots he took before that fight was called. That was almost brutal to watch, where it was one of those fights like throw
the towel. 100%.
Throw in the towel. But he also, I don't know if you've noticed, he has like a weird scar on the inside of his eye from that fight. Like this red, I don't know if it's from that fight, but I didn't notice it there before that. Now it's like this permanent, almost black eye looking corner of his... Give me Al by a decision. I think, though, this decision just makes Dan Hooker that much better. And Al Iaquinta is just going to continue to get a lack of respect to be the underdog here. I think that's crazy.
I totally agree. On DraftKings, you're going to end up paying for the slight favorite, Daniel Hooker, $8,500 against the underdogs. Al Iaquinta, $7,700. Give me Al.
The only thing that could make me change would be if at weigh-ins, it is a crazy size difference. That would be the only thing that could sway me toward Hooker, because I do see it going to decision, so he is the hometown guy. But I do also think, if it's a close decision... Yeah, I still have Al. Still have Al right now, but this is why you want to make sure you're following.
Definitely, definitely. On DraftKings, I'm going to probably have... I'd say about 20%. I see this being a decision as you. I do see it being higher output, but the ceiling, I feel like Al has by far the more output in there. This is going to be an interesting co-main event. I honestly like this better than the only fight that fell out, which was Holly Holm, Raquel Pennington for the co-main event.
I agree. It's a great fight. It's a great fight for a co-main. It's a perfect fight for a co-main of a pay-per-view. There should just be better fights.
On the other,
yeah,
right,
but this
I totally agree.
Fine.
The
last two, the co-main and the main, are worth the price. I just think this main event is one of the best main events in the 185 we've ever seen.
Hot fire. Moving on to the headlining event. All five rounds are going to be shown in the main event at 185 pounds with Robert Whittaker against Israel Adesanya. Adesanya had been having a meteoric rise in the UFC, a perfect 17-0. You know how we absolutely love undefeated fighters in here. He's fought the likes of Vettori, Brad Tavares, Derek Brunson, Anderson Silva. As of late, having a fight of the year contender 5 months ago with Kelvin Gastelum, where Israel Adesanya saw his most adversity ever, eating all sorts of left hooks, getting into ground exchanges, being rocked at times in there, and really showing the heart of a lion. That was what I absolutely needed to see from Israel Adesanya, because I bet against him in a few fights because I'm like, he's still not fighting guys that are testing him. Kelvin Gastelum tested him in that fight, and he came through with flying colors. But don't get it twisted. Kelvin Gastelum cannot beat Robert Whittaker or Yoel Romero, for that matter. Kelvin Gastelum.
I disagree. I think Kelvin could be... I was thinking of Souza.
Oh, yeah, I can think... Yes, I'd agree with Souza, but not Yoel Romero.
I don't know, because the only thing I've seen Yoel Romero do in X amount of time is fight Bobby Knuckles, and then...
And two fight of the year contenders.
And, yeah, but just because two fight... You could be two shitty fighters and make it to a decision.
True.
So I feel like they just evened each other out in such a way that... And a lot of people thought Yoel won the second fight, but... Paulo Costa, that fight, it's like, I still don't know what I think of Paulo Costa, even after that brutal fucking fight. I don't know. So, I don't know.
Censor's working hardcore here. So, but Israel Adesanya, I mean, you know, city kickboxing guy. On the ground, we saw a little bit against Gastelum, but essentially we've just seen him kickboxing in there. Sets up good traps. We'll have good little crisp jabs in there. Question mark kick quite a lot. We'll throw in some spinning heels, flying knees every once in a while in there. Again, that ground game just not tested in any one of his fights where we've actually seen Bobby Knuckles in here against many, many fighters. The 20-4 returning champion in here has fought Rafael Natal, Derek Brunson as well, Souza, Yoel Romero twice, moved up from 170 pounds. He has been finished by Stephen Thompson, a karate striker in there, but that was also when he made that jump to 85, where we've seen his chin kind of make a resurgence. I mean, he got kicked in the head and beaten by Yoel Romero, a hard hitter, and didn't go down. But this is stylistically a very tough matchup for him. The karate stylist, Bobby Knuckles in here, actually has a good lead leg attack in here, which I think can play heavy if he plays against that knee. Moves in well on a southpaw where he'll blitz really well, where Kelvin Gastelum had his most success when he was blitzing Adesanya, and Whitaker blitzes same side well, and it can actually switch. The wrinkle to the game where I see the difference is Whitaker has better shots, has shot more, and on the ground has just proven, just because we haven't seen it from Adesanya, that he can hold you down and ground and pound. Maybe not to a finish, but he can at least ride out rounds. Adesanya's only gone to a 5-rounder once. Whitaker's already made a habit of this a few times. The volume for Whitaker, Adesanya, I believe, was just over 100.
The Silva fight wasn't a 5-rounder?
Against Adesanya? Yeah. No, I believe it was three. Because Silva said, I'm not fighting five anymore.
Oh, okay.
So that was a 3-rounder in there. But where we have Whitaker go over 100 strikes, I believe, in 4 of his fights, Adesanya's only done it once over a 1 5-rounder with Kelvin Gastelum. So I think the output goes to Whitaker in this spot.
Robert Whitaker has fought his last few fights all 5-rounders. He's had 2 more rounds.
He has options.
Yeah, that many more punches.
Right,
So it's like, if the only 5-round fight Adesanya threw that much number, and a lot more Whitaker fights have been 5-rounders, it's probably...
Even-ish.
Yeah.
Even-ish. I'm giving the edge, though, in, again, the grappling, the takedown, mixing it up.
Oh, sorry.
I don't think either of these guys... Really? Which one?
I'm going to get hate for this. I don't think we ever see Robert Whitaker fight anywhere but Australia.
Wow.
Anywhere on that side.
I love it.
His body just looks crazy to me. He's filled in the 185 kind of perfectly. Pretty quick healing for a guy that had his whole internal...
Which, we gotta say, waiting till weigh-ins, this is the epitome of waiting till weigh-ins. Bobby Knuckles has fallen out the day of multiple times, I feel like.
This is the other thing about Bobby Knuckles. If he becomes champion again, cool. See you again in a year and a half, 185, because he'll be so injured that it'll take that long for him to heal again.
Interesting points. Actually, with you saying steroids, I always like the beer belly. I always tell people the bodybuilders get a six pack. HGH. He had a colon issue. Why? Too much extra colon because of HGH. That'd be conspiracy.
Putting it together.
Jake Matthews
plus
in that
the way he walks, the way he has that barreled out stomach a little bit.
I would have not even
and
thought
he is
that.
Diced up. His body is a different way than it used to be.
At 170?
It is a different way than it used to be.
Wow.
He's filled in the 185, and I know everybody, I don't know anyone that hates on Robert Whitaker. I don't know.
I hate everybody. We're not hating.
I'm just saying, Mark, we're looking at steroids. I don't think we ever see him fight in anywhere he's going
to
get tested.
Cody TJ was also on the juice.
Yeah, right, you know what? That's kind of what opened my eyes to things, because I was so naive and I'm like, no, everything's tested, blah, blah, blah. But Robert Whittaker kind of has that cardio too, that EPO cardio where it like comes on strong in the fourth and fifth. It's just too much. Everybody's on steroids. Everybody's on steroids. And he has such a different build. Like,
so back to the nuts and bolts of it. This is a coin flip of a fight. It's evened out on the odds. It opened up Whittaker, a slight favorite. It's -115. That's absolutely right. DraftKings has it. 8,200 against 8,000 for Adesanya. I think you can mix this up. This is a stackable fight, because if it goes five, they're going to be beating a lot of other options. Whittaker averages 81 points. Adesanya, 95 points. I think a stack will give you 70 and maybe over 100 points potentially, winner and loser here. I see a lot of output.
Gosh, I almost feel safer about a stack than so many of the other fighters.
I totally agree. Totally agree.
Oh, man.
But that's the cash, not to win it all. To win it all, you need those underdogs coming through. Give me Whittaker decision right now. This is a close one. This is a fun one. I love that this is a main event and a coin flip. That's how good of a fight this is.
I think that Robert Whittaker is going to become the favorite closer to fight time, because the odds opened Israel Adesanya the favorite, and the more the knowledgeable old UFC people get into it, I think we're going to see that shift. I think Adesanya is going to actually be a live underdog by fight time, so wait if you plan on putting money on Israel, is my opinion on it. But Robert Whittaker, all those things being said, the steroids, the EPO, the cardio, he'll break his leg in half and finish the fight. He'll lose an arm, finish the fight. So all that adversity for Robert Whittaker, and the fact that we don't see Israel really have that kind of power. He's more of a point fighter. It kind of puts Bobby Knuckles, what happens to a Bobby Knuckles that doesn't have to fight with a broken hand or a broken gut or a broken something? You know, he's like hurt his leg the first time with Yoel, and the second time I think he broke his hand or some vice versa.
Right,
or something.
Right, exactly. Might have been switched.
Yeah, over. So it's just like, and what happens, he doesn't have to worry about the power the same way that he did with Yoel. But the other thing in the shift of that is Israel Adesanya's head movement is light years better than Yoel Romero's. His hands are better and faster. And so that makes me question too. Bobby Knuckles been there in two wars with Yoel Romero, and it's almost like a totally different fighter than Israel Adesanya. Like a completely different fight. It's almost like it would have behooved Bobby Knuckles to be like, I want to fight Anderson Silva. Like he should have, like, I also, normally I don't like the battles of guys, but Bobby Knuckles is the younger guy with more octagon age, even though Israel's 30. Right. But I like that Israel stayed so active and he got the time he needed between this fight. If you think about all his fights beforehand, he was fighting like every 2 or 3 months. He's fought 6 times in the last year, and Robert Whittaker's fought 2 times in the last 3. That is crazy. That is, we say the UFC is changing and growing every day. I think Israel, you can't hurt what you can't hit. And I don't think Robert is going to be as lay as much hands on Israel as he thinks. I also think that on a punching machine, Kelvin might surprise everybody. I think numbers, like if it was to go up like that Joe Rogan kick machine, I think Kelvin would have more power in his punch than Robert Whittaker. Mm-hmm. I think he has better boxing, but I think Robert Whittaker is just more well-rounded with kicks and with punches. I think on the feet, Israel can outstrike and outpoint Robert. I do think Robert has that power that can knock him out. That same wobble that we saw with Gastelum could happen, where Robert might just be able to clear knock him out because of technique, not as much power. But the way Israel turned it on four, and then especially round five, where he went out in round five against Kelvin and put on a clinic. I don't even know where he pulled that out of. I rewatched that fight this week, and I also rewatched the last Yoel Whittaker, and I thought Yoel won that fight when I rewatched it. I thought Yoel won it. So I just think Yoel kind of keeps getting screwed with Robert Whittaker. They're really pushing him. So I do think they want this part of the world, so they're okay with whatever the outcome is. Mm-hmm. I think Israel can eke this out. I think Robert's probably more famous, but if I'm the UFC, I want Israel to win this fight. I think Bobby Knuckles has been in the limelight for a little while, and I think he's kind of capped fan-wise, where Israel's just on this trajectory up. So better for business. Give me Israel Adesanya. I like his head movement. I obviously think Bobby Knuckles has the power here. I think the ground game, which we won't ever see, I do think Israel has decent takedown defense, and that also is going to put Bobby in harm's way. Bobby's knuckles have been knocked out too, and the more he's filled into the 185, this could be a hard cut for him, like his 170 cuts used to be, kind of like Jake Matthews. Yep. So I'm going to pick Israel. I also have decisions, so I love the stack here. This fight, I just can't even believe it. It's such a great fight.
It's such a great fight. We got there. We did all 11 cards. It's going to be a fun one. We're going to be watching all of the rest of the vlogs, all the embeds. We got, I mean, now I can finally sit down and listen to other podcasts, see where we're going to stack up, who's going to have the hot picks, the heavy bets. It's going to be dicey now that we have this competition going on.
It'll be fun. Yeah, we're going to talk about it every week. And if you guys want to follow along, you can follow all of them too. And, you know, when we're winning, we're going to be talking shit. And when we're losing, we're going to be talking shit. It's just something else. Yeah, I like the 11 fight card. I like the 11. I don't need 13, UFC. This is fine with me. This 11 is good with me.
Give me more.
You're like, give me 15.
Give me 22. Exactly. Do the Bellator. Put it on three nights a week.
Who cares about my baby? He doesn't have a baby. I'm just kidding.
My fur baby.
Yeah. That sounds dirty. All right, you guys. Thanks for listening once again, and we will see you soon.
Let me.